Living in a homeowners association means leaving the American zone.
WBR Fairfax Radio, you're on the Commons. I'm Sue Bartholomew, and joining me on the Commons today, I have my favorite Energizer Bunny all the way from sunny Florida, running around like a little chicken with his head cut off, or like an Energizer Bunny, actually. Julio, thank you so much.
Thank you, Sue, for having me on your show again. It's a real privilege and an honor, and you know how I enjoy letting everyone know what we're doing together here, working for the common good of all of those that live in associations.
All right, what are we doing here? You're running around. Wait a minute. You're in the middle of elections right now?
Yes, it's been, believe it or not, we've been talking on your show and been friends for years, and my term here in Florida, we have term limits, so I'm basically termed out November of next year as a member of the Florida House of Representatives, and now I'm running for the next open seat, which is an open seat, and that's for senator here in the state of Florida.
So that's not this year, is it?
That will be in August of next year is when we have our primaries, and God willing, if we win the primaries, then in November we have a general election, and then from there we're then elected to be a member of the Florida Senate.
Wow, and then what are you going to do, Julio?
And then move out of an association environment if I ever live in one.
Do you live in one?
No, I don't, but I will tell you that some of my best friends, even after knowing me for years and understanding that we're trying to make it better, have bought and at times realized that they should have listened to my advice, that until we are able to really get it to where it's a pleasant experience, they're now going through problems, and I get more and more calls from them every single day.
Do you really?
It's really a sad state of affairs, but, you know, we in Florida, I like to say we'll take two steps forward and one back,
well,
and that's what happens.
Florida, okay, guys, if you hear a little fuzzy stuff in the background, that's because Julio's running around. He's in the car. He's got a lot of campaign stops to make, so we are doing it on the cell phone. So for that, I do apologize, but I am so grateful to Julio for taking the time out, even on this crazy day, less than a week away from the elections, to join us and talk to us about the sorry state of affairs of condos, not only in Florida, but all over the country. And it's not just condos, right, Julio?
Well, we have HOAs and co-ops and timeshares. Remember, we have the full array of association living in Florida, and I would still tell you that I think this is the state that's developing more and more of these what you call walled-in communities that come with HOAs. So that's going to be another topic for discussion this year when we go through the legislative session, and there'll be a topic for whether we want to start regulating that industry or not here in Florida.
Isn't it the same thing?
About the same thing. The problem that we're having here is there's still a big division right now, especially with the economy, whether people want to be regulated and pay government another fee to have another oversight body. And I will tell you that when we try to poll this or go to different hearings around the state, I'd almost tell you that we're split in Florida on those that do want it and those that don't. Some just want some better arbitration or mediation, and there are those that want to have the full array of regulatory oversight that condos have in Florida. But again, that's where we're at.
You know my feelings on the extra fees for that. I mean, we're already double taxed because local municipal governments mandate them, so they're getting a free ride. And then to say, okay, well now, if you want the laws that we created enforced, you're going to have to pay us extra money. And I've always had a hard time with that. I know that I'm not the only one, I know that other people disagree with me, but that's always been a bit of a problem for me.
Well, that's the situation that we currently have here in Florida. As you know, we've been able to do a lot of changes in law when it comes to condos and so forth, but not much when it comes to homeowner associations. And that is where, we're trying to, establish, some regulatory, changes and fixes, and in many opportunities, just provide people some type of place to go to when they have these problems. Because nowadays, here in Florida, if you're in the HOA, you only have a couple statutes that really apply to living in a homeowner association. And most of those cases end up in a civil courtroom anytime there's a problem in one of the HOAs.
Because law enforcement and just the regular government does not really want to deal with it. I mean, why would they? They manage to kick everything over into the private sector. Hey, you want to live in one of those things, go hire an attorney. Problem is, quite often, you really don't have an option.
That's correct on the homeowner side, but on the condo side, remember that we did years ago some changes and created a fraud pilot program that applies to county and other things. And I'm very proud to tell you that as a result of what we've done for condos, we're up to 12 arrests already with amounts as high as $1,400,000 to as little as $25,000. Being taken from people that are members of the board, property management companies. There's been all kinds of arrests, and law enforcement is really starting to look at this seriously because this is still white-collar crime. It's grand theft. It's fraud.
It is.
And it's finally being addressed, so that is a good piece of information, whereas before we got involved with this UM issue, and nobody had ever been arrested in the state of Florida, and now there's a serious amount of attention being given to them. With some of the changes that we made, but more importantly, the involvement of people that now feel that the government is really looking into the world of condo living. But again, that does not apply to homeowner associations, timeshares, and these type of other environments. That's correct.
And mobile home parks.
Mobile home parks.
All of the other wonderful stuff that we have. But I was going to talk to you about that because as far as I know, Florida is still the only state in the country that has that pilot program. And it's still a pilot program, hey, Julio?
That is correct. We tried last year to get a bill out that was going to deal with the banking industry and a lot of condo issues to try to get these bankers to help people that are involved in possible foreclosures and so forth. And one of the provisions in the bill was we were going to create our own, call it police task force, certified law enforcement officers to deal with only issues that pertain to association fraud. And the bill, we passed it out of the House. We had it on the Senate. The last day we could have got it done, and they purposely killed the bill in the Senate because of the banking provisions. And that's what happens with a lot of our bills. They're so large and they add so many changes in statute to them that a lot of times one provision of the bill becomes a deal killer. And they did kill the bill on the last day of session in the Senate, which would have been a great consumer protection bill to the people of the state of Florida, but it suffered an awful death on the last day of session.
Julio, is there a way of making the bill smaller and just dealing with one issue at a time instead of risking losing all the good stuff?
That is correct. And we are going to attempt that this year. We're going to talk a little bit about what I'm trying to do this year. This year, I'm filing two different pieces of legislation. One of them has to do with prompting the sales of condos in Florida. I think that this is not a Florida problem. This is a nationwide problem. With the economy, condominiums right now are basically at a standstill. We have thousands and thousands of empty units sitting there that nobody's buying. We have thousands of units that are into a foreclosure proceeding or have already been taken back by the lender. And we can't figure out, where are the investors? Why are they not buying these units that are, in some cases, costing half the price of what they did several years ago?
How many of these homeowners or these condo associations are in the tank? Because, you know, if they're having some serious financial problems, and I think people are looking at this much more closely, and also it's a lot harder to get financing.
That is correct, and I will tell you that. I'm going to give you an example. The county that I'm in, we've got 80,000 units that are vacant that have never been sold. We probably have another 20 or 30,000 that have been in a foreclosure proceeding. And then we have, of course, you know, all of those that are, they're trying to be, as they call, short sale, sold and things of that nature. So it's really bad. Florida, if I'm not mistaken, is the second in the nation with the most foreclosures. Now, that said, let's talk about what's happening in the condo world and here in Florida. As a result of these units not selling and the economy being so bad, And then the poor people that are the ones that are living in those half-empty buildings, they're being assessed more and more money every month by the board to make up for the shortfall in revenue to pay for the insurance and for other maintenance fees that are needed. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a really bad trickle-down effect that you're seeing here in Florida.
They protect property values, right, Julio?
That's correct. huge problem. But here's where we're going with my first piece of legislation.
All right.
We met with a number of developers and so forth and asked them, why is it that your investors don't want to buy? And we found out that Florida has several problems. One, of course, is that to get financing nowadays, if you're going to buy in a condo, you got that very well-known Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac that came out with new guidelines that basically state that if you have more than 15% empty units units that are in default or in a foreclosure proceeding, they're not going to go and they're not going to back any loans. So what does that mean? That you now have a situation where it's almost impossible to be qualified or to be able to find funding to buy in a condo. And then second of all, Florida has this law that has been in place, and I'm going to explain to you why it came into being and why we think it's time to change it. And the law basically says that if you're an investor, and by the way, we have identified multiple overseas investors, investors within the United States that have now sat with us and have told us, Representative, if you guys remove this restriction that you have in Florida, we'll come in and buy every empty unit because this is the time to buy. We're going to buy them for half the price. We have the money to sit on them and pay the maintenance fees for the next couple of years till the market starts to recover. But you have to do one thing. And the one thing is, here it is. Florida says that if you are an investor and you want to buy what they call multiple units, as we call it bulk. So let's say there's a building. I'm going to use an example. There's a building that's got 100 units. And let's say only half of them are sold. And you, Mr. Joe Investor, wants to come in and buy bulk, which means 7 units or more for investment purposes. That investor will now be basically tagged or given the responsibility and will be called what they call a successor developer. What does that mean? He picks up the entire responsibility of maintaining that building as if the developer were still holding on to it before turnover. So again, let me be very clear. So instead of being just an investor that wants to buy 7 units because the prices are low, no, if you buy 7 or more, not only now do you become the unit owner, but you also become the responsible, call it developer, and you are going to be responsible for what a developer would have been responsible for until the majority of these units are sold. And that creates a very negative situation for investors to want to buy units. Remember, this only applies to buildings that are completed and have been on the market selling units for years. This does not apply to projects that are still being developed or in the stages of being developed, different phases. Those, if people buy, they know they're responsible for continuing to develop and finish the project. So that said, we can't get anybody to invest.
So wait a minute. Why did this law pass? I mean, what was the rationale? Usually laws come about because there's some knee-jerk reaction to something that happened.
Correct. And let me explain to you why that law was put in effect back in the late 80s, early 90s. In Florida, as you know, this is one of the fastest developing states. A lot of people like to retire here. Well, what happened is back during those times, there were a lot of unscrupulous developers that were building different condo projects. And at times, they had multiple projects going, 2 and 3 different projects going on at one time. Many of them overextended themselves, and they started building one project without finishing it, then got into another project, found out that they had a shortage of funds or just could not finish the original project that they were working on. And what they were doing is they were walking away from some of those projects, or more importantly, this is where the game was being played. They'd create another company under another name or a holding company, and they would sell the remainder of that project that wasn't finished to themselves under another company name or under a holding, you know, name, and now were off the hook and weren't responsible for the responsibility that they had to finish the initial project, because they basically had sold it to a, let's call it a phantom company. So what the knee-jerk reaction was in the legislature during that time, it says, okay, if you guys are selling it to yourselves or selling it to some other fictitious third-party group so that you can walk away from your responsibilities, we're going to create this thing called a successor developer. So if you do that, and it's these bulk multiple units, you're going to pick up the responsibility that you had from when you were the original developer. That's about as simple in layman's terms as I can explain it. So it was done to stop in a very abusive practice. Now, that was when development was flourishing and there was a lot of things being built here in Florida. But what happens? Let's fast forward to the current date and time today. Today, we don't have development. We don't have anybody developing. We have a lot of product. We have, like I said, in Dade County alone, 80,000 units. And I don't really know the numbers of units available throughout Florida, but I'm sure it's in the hundreds of thousands. So we have all this product that we can't sell. This is where at times, as a legislative group, we can go in, go ahead and change the statute, encourage the sale or the sale of these units again, thus getting our market going, which is another thing that we all benefit from, because when real estate is selling, the state is making sales tax off of it. Local governments are making money. The unit owners are not going to be alone. Now they can share in the cost of the maintenance with everyone else that has now bought the units. So it's a win-win situation. So that is why we think that for right now, that provision has to be removed. If ever we get back into the huge development cycle again that we hope someday we'll see more units being developed in Florida, then we can always enact that provision again to protect the consumer. But right now, it's probably the biggest hindrance that we have in trying to get units to be sold in Florida. So that bill, called the Successor Developer Bill, is in the works. We have an agreement. And you know, my world, it's very hard to get even two people to agree on anything. Well, we finally have a bill that the realtors support, that those that are into the mortgage business support, that the unit owners are supporting, that the law firms that I normally have so many wars with are supporting. And everybody has a reason, and that is because we need to have an infusion of cash. We need to start getting these units sold. We need to make the current unit owners whole with allowing the people to buy. And then this will remove the roadblock that Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac put at us, that if there was 15% or more of foreclosures or empty units, they wouldn't really go into approving a loan, and that will deal with that particular problem. So we think this piece of legislation will be key in jump-starting the sales of condos in Florida.
But you're still going to be, well, I've had so many thoughts going through my mind as you were talking here, Julio. For one thing, why is it that there's not more oversight over the developer? Why is the developer allowed to play these shell games? Also, in Florida, you have something that's called a community development district. And from what I understand, developers have been selling all kinds of stuff to these CDDs and getting an infusion of cash and leaving the homeowners, the future homeowners, holding the bag and paying off these mortgages.
That is correct. And that, remember, we're not, those laws that have to do with CDCs will stay in place. Those safeguards, when people walk away from an unfinished product, will still remain. And that's why I want to be very, very clear. A developer in the middle of a development project that walks away from something that is not completed, that you're still waiting for what you were sold and the promises that you were sold, that you were buying into, will still be held responsible for finishing the project. So we're not touching that world. We're talking the world of a finished project, those buildings that have been finished for a long time, that developers built but they could never sell. So everything is still sitting there on hold. There's nothing more to be done except to sell the product that is sitting there already completed. I want to make sure that people understand that. And those are the ones that we're applying the successor developer rule to. That is how we will get finished product, meaning finished units to start selling in Florida. And again, if someday we get back into a major onslaught of new development because there is now a market again to sell condos, then at that time that provision is enacted with a clause put right back into there and to provide that type of protection if we start having those shell games again being played with these different buildings. So we're addressing that, and that's not anything to do with the next bill that we're going to be taking forward that has to do with now, again, the boards, the banking industry, CAMS. We're going to deal with issues of CAMS in a minute, and we'll talk about that. So that'll be the second bill. Those are the expected Julio Robina bills on how we deal with the abuses when it comes to association living.
CAMS, for those of you who don't know, are community association managers, right?
Correct. And what we're doing in Florida, here's the thing. Let's talk a little bit about that other bill. This is a bill, and this will be a big bill. You asked me earlier, can't you keep them short and sweet or make them smaller? We could, but the problem is we have so many problems that we try to do comprehensive, large reforms like the one that I had 2 years ago, which had 34 changes in statute. That's probably been the biggest reform bill passed in Florida in probably the past 15, 20 years, and that was the famous House Bill 995, which, you know, it was just unheard of how many changes we made in my bill there several years ago. But we could take on one or two ideas, but the problem is then it just still leaves people short of what they need to have addressed with the problem. Let me start with these CAMs, these community association managers. In Florida, if you become a licensed manager, and you could be doing things, let's say, incorrectly to be nice. Let's say you're doing things maliciously to be not so nice, or that you
to
just
be honest.
Have, correct, or you just can't be an honest person. It is almost impossible to take the license of a community association manager in Florida. They almost have to have come close to committing murder in order for the state to remove a license. And why? In current law, if you are a CAM, community association manager, but the only way they're going to remove your license from you is that you have had to have committed an act of what they call gross negligence. Gross negligence. So you can imagine what that's like. That's almost like trying to take the license from a doctor, you know, until the doctor's probably had a number of issues where he's hurt a number of people, and then finally a state board will remove the license from a doctor. In this case, it's the same thing. It's almost impossible to remove the license of a CAM. What we want to do is go in there and remove the gross and just make it negligence. And what we want to do, we want to go ahead and enact what they call a three-strike rule. If any manager is hit for three, you know, violations where they have been found guilty of the same thing three times strike, you're out, your license is pulled. If you're caught in anything that's malicious, you know, in one or two attempts, you should have your license pulled. But they've been hiding behind that gross mismanagement for years, and that's why every time I ask the state of Florida, in the past 10 years, how many CAMs have you removed their licenses? They can't really give me a number. One, two of that, and it's ridiculous. And we need to protect people from what I consider to be unscrupulous type managers. And so that's one of the provisions in the bill that is very, very important.
Who determines that they've done something wrong, that they've mismanaged or been negligent?
That's a great question. Believe it or not, it goes through a division of the Department of Business and Professional Regulation, but it's actually a group of other CAMs overseeing themselves. And last time I checked, that's like asking the military not to cover for another soldier
right.
in a time of need.
Right, right. I know. And this is what the industry's been pushing for. And they got it through here. I mean, we've got a license, managers, and then, you know, they've got to be educated, and who's going to educate them? CAI, and, you know, and then they have to become members of CAI. So what a great way of increasing membership over there. And then you have the CAM sitting, or the manager sitting there deciding whether or not, somebody, maybe a good friend or somebody in their company has committed a a problem, and then they decide. So, I mean, I just don't see any great benefit for the consumers or the individuals in here.
That is correct. That is correct, and that is one of the issues that we think definitely needs to be addressed. This is a separate bill that Representative myself, Julio Robina, is sponsoring, and we have provisions in there that will force the banking industry to come to the table and negotiate in good faith. As you know, the federal government gave the banks just billions of dollars. They've called it
stimulus.
We call it bailout money for the banking industry.
Yep.
And they have not, in good faith, sat with us and tried to help these people that live in these condos that are having a heck of a time keeping up with their payments. They really have offered nothing to try to help these people out. Let's talk about another law that we have here in Florida. In Florida, you know, when you are in a foreclosure proceeding, the cases in Florida can take 18 months or longer in some counties to close out a case through the courts. What that means that in Florida, if you are in a foreclosure proceeding, the lender doesn't have to pay till after the proceeding is over, and they only are responsible to pay 1% or 6 months to the association of what is owed to them in the rear, as they say. So you can imagine an association having to go as much as 18 months without seeing a penny coming from the lender who is foreclosing, and then after waiting that long, only is responsible to be the gentleman who's the lender who's initiating the foreclosure proceeding is only responsible to pay the board 1% of 6 months. So you can imagine the financial strain that puts on these boards. What we want to do is force in this legislation banks to, if they purposely, and we know they are purposely at times stalling these foreclosure proceedings, because let's be honest, they don't want to take in any more foreclosed property, because once they do, they have to start making the maintenance payments and whatever else payments are due, and they're overwhelmed with property that they've taken in a problem that they've created for themselves by qualifying people in the past that they shouldn't have. But that said, you know, they don't want to take it in, so they send their attorneys all the time to the court, and they ask for a continuance, and then that will just continue to extend these cases. So what does my law do? It wants to force them to have to pay minimum of 6 months up front. That's one of the provisions. The second provision may be to make the boards whole. If you extended it for 18 months, well, you're going to pay them the 18 months that you owe them. And believe me, the boards can quickly decide and find how much it is that they owe on a breakdown on a per insurance cost per unit, whatever the other maintenance fees are. So there is a way to determine what is owed to the board that they've been paying for that unit while it sat during all those months as it went through the foreclosure proceeding. That's another provision in our bill.
Now, this is the bill that you had this last year, right?
This is exactly the bill that we had sponsored last year. You'll see the exact same provisions in there. It's a number of good provisions. And then there's a third bill that has been filed, and this one will be controversial. I have originally joined on as a co-sponsor of the bill, but I can tell that it's already starting to get a lot of opposition because of a part of the bill that pertains to homeowner associations, and it's a bill that's being sponsored by the primary sponsor of it is Representative Kevin Ambler. He's out of Tampa, Florida. And that's another bill that will have a lot of our provisions on it. And it has language that he's been fighting for years, which is called the home court advantage. Which I got to tell you, the more I look at it, the more I realize the problems that it will bring on for the people that live in homeowner association when it comes to, you know, arbitration or mediation and the cost that it may put upon the homeowner association. So that's another very large bill. That bill did get out of the House. It didn't get passed the Senate last year. And that was the reason we combined a lot of our language into that bill. And that bill's up and running, but that's creating some opposition from even people like our good friend John Bergman from CCFJ. He's very upset with that provision of the bill. He's been upset about us joining in the efforts of co-sponsoring the legislation. But, you know, in the hopes of trying to make sausage, as we call it, which is about what bill making is all about, we've got a number of moving targets, that being one of them, that we're trying to work with to try to see what type of changes we can pass this year. And that one will be somewhat controversial because of the home court rule that Kevin Ambler has included in that particular bill. But that bill will carry a lot of the same things that I tried to do last year to help condos. And last but not least, some of the things that hopefully through the amendment process of these bills that we file, we want to be able to offer additional protections for timeshares and co-ops that really have gotten very little attention in Florida. And then the last thing, Shu, that I just want to hit all the points real quick so I don't leave anything out, is the almighty question, as we said earlier, should Florida regulate homeowner associations or not? And from what I'm getting, people are split. John Bergman and his group have done surveys, and their surveys come back with, if I'm not mistaken, almost a 90% approval for being regulated. But other groups have done their studies, and they find different issues when they ask questions like, okay, you want to be regulated, but do you want to have government charge you additional money for the regulatory arm of government? And that's when the no's start coming in. We can't afford it. We don't want to pay any more money to government. So that's going to be another interesting issue of whether or not Florida and us, we decide to regulate homeowner associations.
Wow.
How was that?
Well, that's a mouthful. Boy, you're still the little Energizer Bunny out there running a million miles an hour. I want to go back to this home rule thing. I'm not sure I understand exactly what that would do. You said it's controversial. You said a lot of people are against it. But what exactly will it do? What are the provisions?
It's basically an alternative to dispute resolution. Currently, it's very costly. Every time an HOA goes into a dispute resolution, having to go through, you know, the process that we currently have these days. And what this will do is give basically some law firms an opportunity to do a lot more hands-on on what Kevin Ambler, the sponsor, is saying that will help with dispute resolution. Remember, dispute resolution is basically how do these HOAs solve their problems, because, remember, they don't have a regulatory arm. Most of that stuff is dealt through mediation or arbitration. And it's a concept that the representative came up with on how to deal with this. And according to him, it would be very much cheaper for the HOAs to go through his program, through these attorneys that would do a lot of the dispute resolution, in comparison to going through the normal process that you go through these days. And I think the big battle here is cost. Some groups say it's going to cost more. Some groups claim it's going to cost less.
My question is, who are the attorneys? If these are the industry attorneys, then the homeowners are creamed.
And that's where I agree with people like John Bergman and his group, that is my concern also. And I want to be clear. I have come on as a co-sponsor of the bill because of all the good provisions and everything else. But if that is something that is proven to me, and I have yet to have a meeting with several bodies in the Capitol as soon as we get started there next week. If it really turns out what there is proof that it will become costly, or let's just say a more expensive process, and really won't resolve the problem of HOA disputes, then you can bet you I will remove my name from the co-sponsorship of that particular legislation. But your question, it's the million-dollar question. Are these the same attorneys? Are we giving it back to a group of people that already have been making a living off these disputes?
Yes.
And now are we giving them another vehicle to make even more money?
Yes.
That's the question that has not been answered.
I can tell you, because I take a more of a national view outlook of what's happening in every state that has attempted to do anything at all to provide HOAs. Now, nobody seems to be worried about the individual. Everybody's wanting to give HOAs provisions to handle disputes more cheaply. Every single time, Julio, it's the industry attorneys who come in. And I'll tell you why. There's a handful of attorneys out there who are up on these laws or who are in a position to take on a job like this. It is going to be the industry. You're giving the industry and the HOAs an even bigger hammer. You're giving them a cannon, basically, to try and shoot a fly with. I mean, that's the first I've heard of this provision. I would not support it.
But I will tell you again that, to be fair, I think you should invite Jan Bergman back to the program to talk about this bill. As a matter of fact, it's interesting. Tonight, we're having another big town hall meeting in the Dade-Broward area with one of the local newspapers called the Sun Sentinel. And it's a big panel discussion today with people like myself, some people that represent the association, John Bergman and his group, and actually Jan should be there personally. And we're going to discuss some of the same things we're doing on this show, some of the laws that I'm presenting. This bill will basically be discussed, and we'll probably hear some of the pros and cons about it. But these are the things that we need to air out. We need to really look at carefully and get a real opinion of what is going to be the backlash of legislation. Remember, things that may look like gold, you know, and they may shine like gold, but they may not be gold. And
all that glitters is not gold, right?
That is correct. And that is why it's incumbent upon us to be careful, do our due diligence, and make sure that what we're trying to push for is really something that is going to be pro-consumer. And I think that if you know Jan and you know me, we'll try to get on board every vehicle to try to get something done, but we're never going to try to push anything that's not going to be a consumer protection piece of legislation. It's just at the end of the day, Floridians need to be protected, and it all ties in with the string. The day that we can provide the protection, I think that that might be the day that people may have a positive experience of living in an association environment.
Dream on. That's never going to happen. Because
I keep hearing that a lot.
It's a flawed concept, and it's like building castles in quicksand. It's just not going to happen. But let me tell you, based on what I've seen happen in the past, you have in Montgomery County, Maryland, you have the Office of Common Ownership Commission, the OCOC. That started off with a panel. Basically, you know, a number of people, different people. What it ended up being, yes, you do have individual homeowners on there, but these are the homeowners that have been trained by the industry. They've been the board members. They've been, you know, these are former board members, basically. The panel is largely made up of CAI attorneys. It's made up of managers. It's made up of realtors. It's made up of the industry, with maybe one or two individual homeowners who have been board members who are on that panel. The way the panel works, from what I understand, is that you don't have to have a homeowner on there. The panel can be CAI attorney, CAI attorney, CAI manager, three people listening to the grievance, and it can be from the same, you know, it could be the guy who actually wrote the governing documents or whatever for the association who's now faced with having to deal with one of the issues. He's not going to say, oh, well, we screwed up. If you look at what Mark Schneider tried to do in Nevada, it's all industry now. I mean, he started off with the first ombudswoman in the country. It went to, you know, a little bit bigger and a little bit more. And now his panel, it reads like who's who in CAI. He says, there's no one out there. You know, when he came on, I said, Mike, look at what you've done. I mean, you've got a whole panel of industry people who are over there trying to oversee this stuff. And he says, well, we've spent 20 years going through trying to figure out how to handle this. He says what it comes down to is it's only the industry that's going to show up and do it. So it's all the, you know, it's all the CAI affiliated attorneys who are going to be there.
And let me comment to that. You know, that's the unfortunate part of the politics that's played when people are trying to do some good things and create some autonomous boards that have fair and balanced representation. We have the same problem in Florida, Shu, and I think you've heard from me. You've heard from John and some other people. We have in the future established about two or three of these different committees and have tried to get people appointed to it that live in the nightmare and that can share what we call the in the trenches point of view and what they're going through. They were never intended only to be an area where all the people that in the industry that live off this were the ones that were sitting on these committees. And unfortunately, the way that committees are established in government, and I think I'd talk on behalf of the state of Florida and probably other states, the appointments are usually left to the presiding officers, meaning that your Speaker of the House, your Senate President, your Governor are the ones that make the appointments to these committees that we establish. For instance, we had a condominium advisory council that I created years ago through language. The goal was to get just regular people, meaning unit owners and, of course, some board members and maybe somebody that represented the law firms, maybe one person who represented the managers, all on board so that we can have constructive criticism and conversation about what we really needed to do. Let me tell you what happened. I think this is the same thing you're referring to. When the appointments were given to the, again, the presiding officers, this is where the politics kicks in. Well, you know who has the ear, of the presiding officers? It's usually a lot of the special interests, which gives money to the campaigns. And then what we noticed, and I think Jan could confirm this, that the appointments were managers and lawyers from the law firms, and there was maybe one, what I call grassroots unit owner on the board. He was the sole lonely minority, and he was overpowered by people that had interests on these committees. So, you know, the people's voice wasn't being heard.
That's right. You had,
again, the industry sitting as the majority on these boards. So that I want people to understand what happens. We try to do things with good intentions, but the way that we're set is when these presiding officers nominate people and, or appoint them to these boards, there comes the political ties and interests that prevail, and they get themselves appointed to these boards or committees.
Look at what happened to Virgil Rizzo. You had someone who came, who was supported by the grassroots. He was appointed to the ombudsman's position or whatever the position was. He was, from everything I've heard, was doing a wonderful job, and then he was unceremoniously canned. My guess is that you had the industry over there complaining about him. Oh, well, you see.
That is correct.
He's over there. He's looking after the interests of the individual, and he cannot do this. And the poor HOAs and these poor board members who are just volunteers after all, blah, 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 blah. And so he's canned. What's happened to the program? I don't hear anything about it. I used to hear all kinds of good stuff. I don't hear word one about it.
Well, Virgil was a godsend, very aggressive. He shook the tree. He infuriated a lot of people that, again, had the political ear of the governor at the time. And since they were saying, "Governor, this guy's giving us a hard time," in my opinion, they said, "You know what? We got to remove this guy from here. He's creating too many waves." Sadly enough, he was removed. And, you know, we've had a bunch of other people in there that haven't been willing to shake the tree the way Virgil did. I miss Virgil Rizzo. Because he's a lot like me. We like to shake the tree so that the right stuff falls from the tree and you can see what's really happening. But that goes back to bureaucracy. But, you know, that brings me, and I don't want to get off the subject, but that brings me to an issue in general called apathy.
Mm-hmm.
One of the biggest problems that we have, not only in associations with people that are apathetic and won't go to their meetings, don't want to go to the board meetings because they figure, what for? These people are going to do whatever they want anyway. But, you know, here's where we have a big difference of opinion. The same way there's apathy when it comes time to vote for your, you know, federal, state, county, and city elections, and you get less than 20-25% of the voters to come out, that's what we get when you have apathy. And that's what you got when you allow that type of apathy to allow them the machineries to get in and get their people elected. Well, living in an association is no different. When you got people that don't want to vote or are willing to just say, let somebody else do it, then you've got what you would consider to be that element that you keep complaining about that gets itself reelected. And then comes state government with these appointments. You know, I was hoping that during my tenure as a state member of the state house that I would see people just infuriated, the millions of people that live in these associations, just for one day get together and send thousands of emails to my colleagues and say, enough is enough. You're either going to take care of this nonsense and you're going to quit playing politics with our homes, or we're going to take you out of office. And I'm still waiting to see that, Sue.
You know, I get calls from a lot of people, Julio, and I was reading something today, and it said that we are the biggest fear-based society in the world. And I was thinking that the other day as I was watching, because, you know, we're going to have elections here next week as well. I haven't seen a single positive ad out there. It's always, you know, so-and-so is doing this, you know, Joe Schmo is going to increase your taxes, he's going to take your firstborn, he's going to do this, he's going to do that. This ad was authorized and paid for by John Doe, and then you go to, you know, John Doe wrote this horrible story in high school, and therefore he is not fit to be your representative. Do not vote for him. Ad sponsored by Jane Doe. And, you know, nobody says, look, here are the issues, here are the problems, here's what I plan on doing about it. Nobody.
That is correct.
We have got people so scared. I get calls from people. This is John. 6 months later, hi, this is Jim. Remember I talked to you a while back? And then, you know, again, they'll call, this is Jeffrey. I think I called you I talked to you. They don't either, they're even afraid of giving me their real names. I get the same people calling me, and every time they call me, there's a different name. They're scared to death.
But what is that? What is the message that you're sending when you say that? That fear will never create changes. If you are scared or you're being intimidated, if you're not willing to step up, and as we like to say in slang here, take the bull by the horns and work with this and try to stop it, then it doesn't do any good. Because then you get somebody like myself that I'm willing to tell you who the colleagues are that are helping you and those that are against you. And I'm willing to go against the grain, and I'm willing to, you know, to go against the status quo. And I'm ready to fight with people that we know are making money off of this. And I put it out there, and I bring you these ideas for changes. And I know that I could be successful in changing laws if I had an outpouring of people that got behind me. And who are these people? Not my colleagues, the voters that could put pressure on these individuals.
I'm in my 10th year of doing this show, and for 10 years I've been telling people, for God's sakes, stand up, find a backbone, go get a shot of testosterone or something, but fight back. You know, you cannot live your life in fear.
That is correct, and that's a message that needs to keep getting out there all the time. Do not allow yourself to get intimidated, because then what happens to people like you and Mishu is our opposition will look at this and say, you see Representative Robina? And they'll tell everybody, it's just Representative Robina.
Yeah.
He's just a nutcase out there doing this.
Yeah.
And Shu, she's just radical and just overboard. And because notice that where are the people that they claim that they represent? Where are they? How come they're not calling you Mr. Legislator? How come they're not filling your inbox with emails? How come they're not out there picketing against what's going on? So again, I hate to say this, but you know, I'm about as honest as I can, as anybody can be, that this is also partly the responsibility of people that live in these associations that need to stand up and stand up against. And I'm going to give you what I hope someday I will see, that I file a bill. It's a good bill. It's a bill that you'll notice that's going to provide protection, and that all of a sudden, one morning, I get to the Capitol, and I open up my laptop computer, and I see 500, 1,000 emails from people all around, and they're sending the emails to their direct, you know, lawmakers that they vote for and say, we've got your name, we're going to get active next election, and we're going to take you out unless you start doing what you need to do to protect me as a homeowner in an association environment. You know that I've seen it done once in my 8 years as a lawmaker, and it had to do with this case called Terry Schiavo. It was a young lady.
Yeah.
Well, I got to tell you, there was an issue that nobody wanted to touch with a 10-foot pole. all of a sudden it became a big issue where government shouldn't interfere on people's rights to die, and as they said, to pull the plug on an individual who the family wanted to disconnect. A lot of people thought that she had the right to live even under those conditions. It wasn't going to even be touched. Within a week, thousands of emails. There's something that prompted and motivated people to stand up and send emails to their representatives. You know what kind of power people have? Not only did we drop everything that we were doing during that year and put everything on hold and went to addressing that issue, but it went all the way to the President of the United States. The power the people have,
yeah,
if they really want to get behind a cause. And I can't preach that. I can do everything that I can within my means and in my powers. You can do everything you can to get the message to people. But at the end of the day, if I get them behind me and they pressure their elected officials the same way I just finished explaining to you, I can make these changes happen. But I'm not a miracle worker, and I can't do it without a team. And that, I think, is a good message for this show today, that you heard how many things I discussed that are on the table. And I can make these things happen. You could too, Shu, help people make it happen. But I can't do it without people getting behind me. If people want to live in fear, then so be it. You're going to have to continue to deal with the problems. The day we come out in numbers and rebel against what's going on and speak our mind, and I'm going to use this word, threaten your elected officials that you will take them out unless they address your issues, it's going to be status quo as always. The special interests will continue to control, and people like us will be made out to be a bunch of radicals and crazies that are the ones stirring it up. But look, there's nobody from their voters calling the rest of you guys. It's just a small group of people. So don't give it the attention.
You know, you're talking in general, but are you still with us?
I'm still here.
Okay. We're getting some interference here. One of the things, and you know, you have to realize that it is very true, is that if a homeowners association's got incredible powers, these are powers that they were given by the legislatures across the country. So if you do not toe the line, if you are seen as a troublemaker, then the associations will come after you. And this is a very real threat. So I can understand not wanting to face having to pay thousands and thousands and hundreds of thousands of dollars in legal fees to defend yourself from an out-of-control board that's been given those powers. So I can understand the fear to a certain extent. However, if you band together, guys, which is what Julio was saying, and just one day. Can we call for one day, Julio?
I hope so. I pray every day that we could get one day of that type of unity, people against abuses in association environments.
Let's plan on it.
Well, I want to end with one thing. I will tell you, and this applies our message here to government in general. I mean, this applies to when you're upset with your federal lawmakers and state lawmakers or your county commissioners or your city commissioners or even your school board members. If there is an uprising, you can remove them, but there has to be unity. But, you know, the message is clearly, and here's my last comment. Last night, every night I'm out and I do this on my own. I went to a private condo association meeting, which was taking place in the parking lot of a building because the current president, which they call the dictator, would not even allow them to use a room. And they complained about everything. Well, guess what they finally united? The majority of the people united last night, and they started the recall process. And they will remove that board and will put new people in. But for years they complained, and they couldn't get a majority to come together. You know what it took was another assessment that this president hit them with, and sometimes it takes the pocket to get hit before people really get mad.
Yeah.
And they did. And they had 60 unit owners out of the 75 that were out in the parking lot with me yesterday, and I tell you, they're on the way to removing a dictatorship board that they have in place. So again, message again, please, folks, people like you, Shu, and like self and Jan that are doing what we can will only go so far until we have the backing of people in general. And that's my final message, and hope that people are listening.
I'm listening, Julio. Thank you so much. I really love having you on anytime. And let's plan on having one day where we can get the American people together to just decide they're going to do something.
I hope so. And thanks again for inviting me on your show.
Thanks, Julio. Good luck, and I'll talk to you real soon, okay?
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you for joining us today. Please check out our website at onthecommons.us. On the Commons is produced by OTC Multimedia Productions.
Well, I finally bought my dream home to enjoy retirement life. I've made new friends and buddies, lots of parties for my wife. It seemed that life was perfect, all my neighbors felt the same. Then along came death by CCRs, life's over, I'm fair game. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Now there's lots of open meetings close to justice for HO. Those arrogant board members say what they want you to know. The CAI and ULI will help you lose it all. But I wouldn't sell that dream home yet, the writing's on the wall. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Well, we're not afraid or stupid, all your threats mean nothing here. Time marches on, soon you'll be gone, united we'll be there. So put your rules and CCRs up where the sun don't shine, and enjoy those precious golden years, stop messing around with mine. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell.